There you go. So last time we left off on Daf Lamed Hamad Beis, and we were at the two dots, about 12, 13 lines, where the lines become medium. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana. So the Gemara says the following, Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Am Rav Yochanan Mishum Rav Yehuda Bar Iloi. Bo Re'e, Shaloka Doros HaRishonim Doros Achronim. You want to see the difference between earlier generations and later generations. What's the difference? And clearly, the earlier generations were greater in stature, and I want to talk about that a little bit. So, Doros HaRishonim, Asu Torasan Keva Umelachtan Arai. The earlier generations saw Torah, so their spiritual pursuits, as their primary purpose in this world. And their malacha was arai. They had to earn a living because you had to put food on the table. It's a mitzvah, but it's not your primary focus in life. Zovazon, this kind of biyatan. And they were successful in both pursuits. Doros ha'achronim, she'asu malachton keva, v'torasan arai. The later generations that made their malacha, their primary focus, and their spiritual pursuits arai, zovazo lo niskayim v'yadam. They were successful with neither. And this clearly is here because of its echoes of the previous Gemara. Then, v'amar rabba v'rachana rabbi yochanan mishum rabbi yehuda bar iloi, bo re'e shaloka daras harishonim daras achronim. The same statement. See the difference between earlier generations and us. Doros harishonim hayu machnisim peiroseim derech gagos derech chatzeros derech karpifos kedei lepotron. Well, actually, I'm going to take out the words chatzeros actually here. Oh, did I skip a line? I'm sorry. Let me hayu machnis derech traximon. Oh, sorry, derech traximon kedei lechayvan b'meiser. Thank you. The earlier generations would bring their fruits in, their produce in, through the front door, we might put it that way, in order to make sure that they would be obligated in shumas and meisers. Doros ha'achronim machnisim peiroseim derech gagos derech karpifos kedei lepotro min ha'maaser. They would bring it in via the roof. They would bring it in some other way in order to make it exempt from meiser. I don't want to dwell on this topic at length. We've touched upon aspects of this at the beginning of the fifth parak, but just to explain the following, the way most Rishonim understand. Not everybody agrees with this. The Rifai thing disagrees. But many Rishonim say that in order for produce to be liable, to be tevel, mida oraisa, to be liable for trumas and maisras, and one who eats it is chayiv misa bidei shamayim, is liable for the heavenly death penalty if they've not properly tithed it, it has to be tevel. And in order for that to happen, two stages have to take place. Number one, there has to be a gemar malacha, meaning the processing has to be finished. And number two, it has to be brought into the house. It has to be brought in through the door, the front door. And when you bring in processed, fully processed produce that way, when I say fully processed, I don't mean you don't have to grind it up into flour, but it means the kernels have been separated from the chaff, and you now have just kernels. So you need a combination of gemar malacha, whatever the finishing of the processing is, combined with what's called ri'as penei habayis. It has to see the front doorway. If you bring it in the back door, or you bring it in through the skylight, so then it hasn't had re'es p'nei abayis, and therefore it will be not chayiv, at least midoraisa, in being tevel. Now, midrabanan, they did prohibit eating once you process the grain, once you have, before you even process the grain, before you even have miruach hakri, believe it's only before then, you're only allowed to eat from the food arai, haphazardly. I want a little snack. I can't eat what's called their achilas keva. However, exactly one wants to define that. I believe that even before miruach hakri, you cannot eat achilas keva. I don't think I'm wrong about that. In this case, once you've had miruach hakri, but you haven't had re'ias p'nei abayis, you can, I believe, maybe you can continue to eat arai. You can. I must have that wrong. It must be that even, no, I don't know. I'm not really quite sure how to put that piece together. But the assumption here is that if you brought the produce in not through the front door, then it will not be chayev midaraisa, and therefore only achilas keva is prohibited rabbinically. One of the things that's included in haphazard eating in achilas sarai is feeding it to your animals.
No matter where you bring it in,
no. Midrabanan, you're not allowed to eat achilas keva. If you want to just, you know, have your wheat pile there and spend the next 6 months snacking on the kernels, as opposed to, you know, taking a bunch of the kernels and grinding up, making bread, which would probably be considered, that would be considered achilas keva, that you're not allowed to do without separating shumas and maizes rabbinically. But you can eat achilas arai. So the earlier generations would go out of their way to bring the produce in through the front door, kidei l'chayvin the maisa. But the doros achronim would bring it in, you know, through the skylight or the like, in order to exempt it from maaser. The Amar Rav Yanai, ein ha-tevel mischayev b'maaser ad sheyireh p'nei habayis. Tevel is not obligated, meaning untithed produce is not obligated in being tithed until it sees the opening of the doorway, the opening of the house, meaning it comes in the front door. Eshenemar b'yarti ha-kodesh v'n habayis. So when the Torah speaks about vidui maaser, a person confession is not the right term, but I don't know what the term for vidui maaser is. It's a proclamation of some kind, an attestation that you've done what you're supposed to do. It's done at the end of the, it's done at Pesach of the fourth year and Pesach of the Shemitah year. After each set of 3 year cycle of maestros has been completed. Remember that in the, every year except for Shemitah, when the produce is ownerless, is hefker, so there's no truma to maestros. Every other year, all 6 years, you separate truma, you separate maestros rishon. But there's a cycle of when you separate Maaser Sheni versus Maaser Ani. The first and second years you separate Maaser Sheni. The third year you separate Maaser Ani. The fourth and fifth years you separate Maaser Sheni. The sixth year you separate Maaser Ani. So the bottom line is that that the first and second and fourth and fifth years you separate Maaser Sheni. The third and sixth years you separate Maaser Ani. And then the year after the 3 year cycle, meaning the fourth and seventh years, Pesach, you pronounce this, make this attestation that you've done everything that you were supposed to do for the previous 3 years. So just to review one more time for what might have been missed, at the end of each 3 year cycle, the sub-cycle, the Shemitah cycle, the first, second, and third years where you separate two Maaser Sheni and one Maaser Ani, and then the same thing, 4, 5 Maaser Sheni and the sixth Maaser Ani. So at the end of those cycles, meaning Pesach of the fourth year and Pesach of the Shemitah year, the seventh year, you then make this attestation, and you you say that I got rid of that which had to be gotten out of the house. I did everything. I gave everything I was supposed to give to whomever I was supposed to give it. I didn't violate any of the rules. I didn't forget to do anything. And the Torah, there are more things that you claim that you did properly. So there, the Torah says, "Bi'arti hakodesh min habayis." I took the kodesh, which means the untithed produce, and I got it out of the house, meaning I gave the parts that was supposed to go to whoever was supposed to go. That means that somehow it must have come into the house first. Now, therefore, it's from that basis that we say that tevel is not obligated in shumos and maisos mida oraisa until it comes in the house. And, I mean, one could have said, of course, that if it comes in through the skylight, well, it's in the house, but Chazal understood that it has to be min habayis, the normal way that it comes in and goes out of the house. So that was Rav Yanai said. Rav Yochanan Amar, afilu chotzer kova'as, shenemar, v'yachlu v'sh'arecha v'sabeyu. Rav Yochanan says that even a chotzer, it doesn't have to be the door to your house. If there's a courtyard in front of your house and there's a doorway to that courtyard, it does the same thing. The Mishonim point out that this machlokes is only on a daraisa level. Even Rabbi Yanai agrees that a chotzer is kova'as lemaser, at least midrabanan, and once it enters the chotzer, be it daraisa for Rabbi Yochanan or derabanan for Rabbi Yanai, you are no longer to eat any of it. You can't even eat achilas arai. But up until that point, you can eat from the produce achilas arai, I'll call it haphazardly, not derech keva. And if you bring it in via the roof, then that permission to continue to eat arai continues to exist. Okay, what is the issue? What is this business of a chatzer? What is the concept behind the chatzer? So it's not entirely clear, but if you look at the Mishnayos and Maestros, it would appear that The definition, there are a number of, there are like four different opinions in the Mishnah as to what constitutes a chatzer. In fact, some of you might actually have it in the back of your Gemara. The Mishnah is in Maisros. I don't know if I have it in this one. If you have a Vilna Shas, it's probably printed in the back. In the third, I think it's Perek Gimel Mishnah Hey, maybe, where there are several different opinions as to, no, maybe they don't have it printed in these. In the regular Vilna Shas, they print the Mishnayos Zeraim in the back. It's not in here in mine, as far as I can tell, unless I missed it. But basically, there seem to be two features of that particular chatzer. One is that the common denominator for almost all the opinions is that there's a degree of privacy. There's a degree of privacy that people can't just come in. In other words, one of the opinions is that if you were to walk in and somebody say, "What are you doing here?" that's called a chatzer, that's kovas lamaser. It seems to me that the principle behind this is that the chatzer or the bayis is the place that you eat. I don't think this has changed much really today. I think there still is a certain social sensibility is you don't eat in the street. There's a little less of that. People may walk, they buy a hot dog or a pretzel in the street corner, but the sense of you don't sit and eat your lunch in the street. And that generally is that there is a Gemara, and it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, that someone is ochel bashuk. Someone who eats in public is pasul le'idus. Now, they're pasul le'idus because the assumption is there's something unrefined about their character and maybe they wouldn't tell the truth. I don't think it means that if there's a restaurant in the pandemic and they, you know, now you have outside seating at the restaurant, that's not what they mean by someone who's ochel bashuk. Although I suspect in their time they might not have been comfortable quite doing. Right. So I think that there is a difference between that and someone who's just, we would say, stam in the street. And therefore, this chatzer has to be the kind of chatzer where people, well, you're comfortable eating. It can't just be that people would come in. If someone would walk in, you would say, "What are you doing here? This is private." So then that chatzer is not kova as lamasa. All right. So that's what the Gemara says, that the difference between Doros HaRishonim and Doros HaAchronim, it cites two differences. There is often a popular conception of the term we have called Yeridas HaDoros, a descent in the generations. It's worth clarifying that for the most part, where this occurs in Shas, this is not the way it's typically, it's not the way it's understood by many. This is not an inferiority intellectually or an inferiority in Torah knowledge. It's actually inferiority in piety. When you take just these two examples to start with, I'm going to cite a couple of others. When you take these two examples, so these are not examples of people who are more or less knowledgeable in Torah. This was a question of personal piety, how truly religious they were, how careful they were in mitzvos, how much they desired to do mitzvos. The two of these have a common denominator, both economics driving them, right? The people who were Torah san keva melach tan arai, and they didn't look for loopholes and ways to get out of giving trumas and maisos to the Kohanim. That was the Doros HaRishonim. That's not a question of greater or lesser knowledge in Torah. That's simply a question of piety. There is another Gemara, I believe it's, I think it's in Tainus, probably in the third parak, where the Amoraim bemoan the fact that, you know, the earlier generations, when they prayed for rain, they were much more successful. One of the Amoraim says, you know, we learn like, I don't know, X number of Mahaduros, X number of versions in the Seches Uksin. And in the earlier generations, they only learned Seder and Ezekiel. And when Rabbi Yehuda would get to many issues, he would say that that the Havayos of Rab and Shmuel or something like that. All these questions, I don't know how to make sense of this. But Rabbi Yehuda would take off one shoe when the fast would begin. He would already be taking off just one shoe, and the rain would come pouring down, and we scream and scream and scream, and nobody listens to us. So that Gemara itself makes it very, very clear. It's not about Torah knowledge. The later generations were far more expert in Torah. They were far bigger lamdanim, but they didn't have the piety of the earlier generations. And there's also, in that vein, there's a Gemara in Shabbos where Rabbi Chizkiah, who appears to be Rabbi Yochanan's Rebbe, he raised a question about something, and Rabbi Yochanan said, "Rebbe, you taught us something similar, which is applicable here." And he responds to that by saying, "Les dein bar inish. This is not a human being." He's like above that. And then the Gemara quotes what's a very famous statement, that Rishonim Malachim, Kemalachim, if the earlier generations were like angels, Anu Kivnei Adam, we're like human beings. Rishonim Kivnei Adam, if they were like human beings, Anu Kachamorim, we're like donkeys. V'lo Kachamoro Shor V'chinina Mendoza and Pinchas Ben Yair. Right, V'chinina Mendoza's donkey, I believe, was the one that took back the Aveda to its owner, and Pinchas Ben Yair's donkey would not eat Tevel, It would not eat until you separate transmysis, which is kind of funny because usually we are allowed to feed animals. Animal eating keva is considered achilas arai. But when you think about that model, that again is not the model of intellect or of Torah knowledge. It's the model of piety when I look at the donkeys. Right? These donkeys were from donkeys. They weren't lamdonim. They were just from. If we can say that. I mention this because there is a very important principle in halacha, which is known as Hilchos HaKibasroi, that we pass in like the latter-day authorities. The Rishonim grapple with this question because there is a principle that Ein Halacha K'talmud B'makom Harav. We don't pass like the Talmud against the Rebbe, but Hilchos HaKibasroi. So there may be different kinds of answers to that question. One of the answers given by some of the Rishonim is up until the generation of Abai and Rava, Ein Halacha K'talmud B'makom Harav. You give greater primacy to the earlier opinions. When it came to Rabban Abaye, Hilchos HaKibasroi. However, one wants to understand in the context of the Gemara, it certainly is the normative principle in Halacha, that Hilchos HaKibasroi. I don't even want to say that this is a breakdown in Sfarad and Ashkenaz, because I don't think that it's true, but particularly in Ashkenaz, if you read the Ramah's introduction to his Darkei Moshe, the Darkei Moshe was the Ramah's commentary on the Torah. It was a lot like the Beis Yosef. It's a much shorter version than the Beis Yosef. And he was working on it when the Beis Yosef was published. And he talks about how the earth shook. The Beis Yosef, Rav Yosef Kara, beat him to the punch here. So that's the Ramah's Darkei Moshe. It's his commentary on the Torah. In the introduction, he talks about style of psak or method of psak. And he talks about how when he was younger, he wanted to paskin like the earlier authorities, I would call Beis Yosef style, like Tosfos, like the Rush, give greater weight to those authorities. And his colleagues hit him over the head and said, that's not the way we paskin. We look at the last Sfarim. We look at the halacha manuals of the last couple of centuries. So, you know, in the world of Lundus, we tend to think of, well, the Balei HaTosfos, again, some late Ashkenazi Rishon. It's not a contest. But the reality is that Hilchos HaKibasroi and the Ramah himself turned around and, you know, accepted that approach, which was the standard approach in Ashkenaz, that one follows the latter-day authorities. I think Sfaradim also grew to a great extent, certainly in the modern period, but that's the principle with which we operate. Now, one might ask the question, really two questions, how does this fit with the idea of Yerides HaDoros? The answer to that question is that Yerides HaDoros is about a spiritual decline, not about an intellectual decline. And what goes along with that is the following, and this is a comment that the Rith makes at the end of Maseches Eruvin. Why is it that we paskin like the Bavli against the Yerushalmi when there's a debate between the two? So the Rith, on the last page in his commentary of Eruvin, on the discussion of Hashmas Kol, making things that make noises on Shabbos, like door knockers, where the Yerushalmi was very machmir, but the Rith understands the Bavli as being mekel. So the Rif explains that the reason why we paskin like the Bavli, again, whenever there's a debate between the Bavli and the Yerushalmi, is because the Chachmei HaBavli had the Yerushalmi, a point that has been debated by scholars, but when I taught this parak in Yeshiva 15 years ago, I was absolutely persuaded there's enough evidence here the Rif is correct, that the Chachmei HaBavli had the sugyos of the Yerushalmi here, not just statements from Eretz Yisrael, but they had the sugyos. I think the Rif is correct. I think it's clear that, yes, and what we can say is that if one has the other, obviously it has to be the Bavli, it has to be Yerushalmi. Nobody would debate it. Can't go in the chronological, can't go in the reverse direction. And I believe that there are enough sugyos in this parak alone which indicate that they have not just the statements, the maimers of the from Eretz Yisrael, but they actually have the laid out structure of the sugya. So, but the Rif claims that. You can agree with me, disagree with me, whether my proofs are good or not, but that is what the Rif claims. And the Rif says, therefore, since the Chachmei HaBavli had the Yerushalmi, they had all the data in front of them, and when they decided what was right, we don't say Hilchos HaKibasroi, by the way, if someone did not know the earlier opinion. Let's say you have an Achron who never saw the Rishon, in theory at least, you know, let's assume it wasn't a Rishon that was hidden away. He just didn't see it. So then we might not say Hilchos HaKibasroi. And this is something that, because they don't have all the information. This comes up actually in Choshen Mishpat in Simen, I think it's Simen Chafei, where they talk, where the Rishonim debate the ability to argue with the Gaonim. It's a big machlokas of Balamor and the Ravid. But the Rush quotes the Balamor, I think it's the Balamor who says, that if someone wants to argue on the Gaonim and they disagree with the Gaonim's interpretation, they're allowed to do so. You can't argue on the Talmud Bavli, but you can argue on the Gaonim. But if you didn't know what the Gaonim said and you said something, then your opinion might not be valid. It might be what we call a Toa B'Dvar Mishnah or something like that. But Hilchos HaKavasura rests upon the assumption that the latter authorities knew all the earlier material, and they then made a decision which they thought was the correct opinion, and that's who one follows. One might then raise a very important question, which is, why then could the Amoraim not argue on the Tanaim? And why can't we argue on the Talmud Bavli? Right? We are the latter-day authorities. The Amoraim were later than the Tanaim. The Amoraim should have been able to look at the material they had received from the Tanaim or received, or with the material we've received. So the question is, well, why can't we argue? So the Kesef Mishnah, the Rav Yosef Karo, in his commentary on the Rambam in the second paragraph of Hilchos Mamrim, raises this issue, and he says, yeah, really, you follow the judges in your generation. In the Chashofet Ela Shabi Amecha. But he says it was convention. The Amoraim agreed that they wouldn't argue on Tanaim. It's not that in theory, conceptually, they couldn't. It was the decision that was made that there was some type of codification and nobody gets to argue on the Tanaim. You can't, if you want to adopt a position against Tanaim, you have to have a Tana to hang your hat on. It has to be, oh, he holds like that Tana. And in the same way, the Kesef Mishnah says, we accepted not to argue on the Bavli. We accepted that the Bavli would be binding, and therefore, if you cannot read your position, if you cannot find support for your position somewhere in the Bavli, then your position has to be wrong. That's sort of accepted convention. But the bottom line is that that's Hilchos HaKavasura. So there's no contradiction between Hilchos HaKavasura, that we follow the latter-day authorities, versus Yeridas HaDoros, that Lo Kedoros HaRishonim HaDoros HaAchronim, because one speaks about intellectual capability where there isn't necessarily, it's not that the later generations are superior, but they do have the benefit of having all the materials, whereas when it comes to spiritual piety, the earlier generations clearly surpassed the later generations. Yes?
Very interesting comment about the Doris Rishonim. I spent about 7-8 years ago spending the day between a Surakarta doing Sahara. And I asked them about their traditions for women. And they told me, they showed me the clothing they put on for women. And for women, they put on a talus cover, but out with tzitzit. And when I asked them,
interesting.
And when I asked them, the answer was always Kabbalah. And they didn't speak any English, and you know, they didn't speak much Hebrew, but it was all Yiddish, and I'm fluent in Yiddish. So we came to say, oh, Kabbalah, Kabbalah, Kabbalah. And when I did some further research, I found in Simon Shin and Oliver Shin and Dead, there's a long passage, and it says that in his, the early Doris, all the women wore talus cuttings, and therefore you should bury a woman with a talus cutting. But now the Doris are weaker. So in order not to insult somebody who didn't wear it, everybody should wear a talus cutting, like it says it's off.
Wow.
And that's why the Natura Karitan woman, Hayo, they wear,
this is right. Okay.
A few days later, I spent with the Chavrut Kedusha of the IDF, and they were holier than the Torah Karta. I will tell you that. Such Kavod HaMes was amazing.
Okay.
Interesting experience.
Okay. Fine. So now we return to Maseches Brachos. Chutz min Hayayin. The Mishnah had said on the previous page that on things that come from the tree, Al Peres Ha'ilan Mahu Omer Bori Pri Ha'etz, you make a bori pri eitz on fruits of the tree, chutz min hayayin, except for wine. And wine, even though it emerges from grapes, and grapes grow on the tree, you make a special bracha bori pri agafen. So the Gemara asks the question, maishna yayin, what makes wine so special that it gets its own bracha? Ilema mishum b'ishtani iluya. If you're going to say that it is because it has been changed its form and it is changed to a higher form, then if that's the case, Are shemen the ishtani li luya, the lo ishtani li bracha. If you have shemen, if you have olive oil and you consume it, it gets the regular bracha bori pre eitz. The Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Vachain, Amar of Yitzchak, Amar of Yochanan. Shemen zayis mevarchan alav bori pre ha'etz. The Gemara is going to talk about this later. If you take a cup of olive oil and you drink it, which I highly, highly advise against, where you better have some probably pretty strong antacid medicine, is my sense. And actually, that's relevant for the Gemara. That's relevant for the Gemara. Olive oil, you really don't want to drink olive oil straight. Anyway, so the Gemara will talk about when do you make bori pri eitz on olive oil, because it's not normal to drink olive oil. But for the moment, when you do make a bori pri eitz on olive oil, you make a bori pri eitz. You don't get some other special bracha. So why? Shemen is a big improvement. just like wine is a big improvement. So the Gemara answers initially, Amrei, they first wanted to say, Hasa mishum delo efshe. There's no way. Hechi nevarech, how are you going to make the bracha? Nevarech, bore pri hazayis. So remember, we don't say bore pri ha'etz, we say bore pri hagecha, or hagecha. So why not say bore pri hazayis? Well, that doesn't work, because peira gufe zayis ikre. The fruit is called zayis, and the juice is not the fruit of the fruit. The juice is the fruit of the tree. So you can't say bore pri hazayis. But don't get, Larry, don't get too into it, because the Gemara is about to slap it down. It's like, come, the Gemara is about to say that doesn't make any sense. So, v'nevarech aleh bore pri eitz zayis. Okay, so fine. You don't want to say, you don't have a word zayis that's the equivalent of gefen, right? You have anavim are grapes, and you have gefen is the grapevine. So zayis, although I thought zayis is also the olive tree, zayis is the olive, so you can't say bore pri hazayis, like you can't say bore pri hanavim. So say bore pri eitz hazayis. What's the big deal? We can be creative in language. Ela amar mar zutrina, totally different reason. The reason why wine gets a special bracha is because chamra zayon mishcha lo zayon. Now, again, I'm not a wine drinker, so I cannot speak to this reality. I'll tell you the conclusion of the Gemara from the outset. The Gemara claims that a small amount of wine sates you, or I would say probably, obviously physically it doesn't make sense, to say that a small amount of wine sates you, but a large amount of wine makes you hungry, makes you hungry. It can't be because of the volume. It has to be some effect on the appetite. Again, I can't speak to it as not really being a wine drinker. I don't know. Drinking one or two glasses of wine versus drinking five or six glasses of wine, does the first one make you not hungry, whereas the larger amount of wine makes you hungry? I have no idea, but that's what the Gemara asserts. Maybe it was their wine. Maybe it's true for all wine drinkers, and I just don't know. So the Gemara says that chamra zayin, but mishcholo zayin. Olive oil doesn't have that effect. Now, which just by the way, I also know from a different perspective, from a caloric perspective, you would think, you know, have a quarter of a cup of olive oil and you'll be full for half the day, right? It is pure fat and a large number of calories. But the Gemara says that chamra zayin, mishcha lo zayin. Well, yeah, you're curled up in a fetal position, so you don't have much of an appetite. That's true, but okay. So the Gemara says, is that true? Umishcha lo zayin v'hatnan. Hanoder min hamazon mutar b'mayim uvamelach. So the first thing, the Gemara, we're going to have a little mini sugi here that we have to digest first before we get to the... No, I'm going to translate. This whole thing, we're now going to have like a big bracket just to make a basic point. But this is what happens based upon the Mishnah and the Dharm. Someone who takes a nether from Mazon, I abjure any hana'ah from Mazon. So mutar b'mayim uvamelach. You're allowed to consume water and salt, because those are not considered Mazon. They don't sustain. So now, v'havinan ba, and we wondered about it. Mayim uvamelach. Hu delo ikri mazon. Ha kol mili ikri mazon. It sounds like those are the only two things that people consume that aren't called mazon. So if that's true, neima teve tufte de rabu shmuel da amre, ein mevarchen bore mine mizonos edla b'chameshes haminim bilvat. So Ram and Shmuel, by the way, are the first place, at least in the Bavli, first place we see of the bracha bore mine mizonos. When we learned the first Mishnah weeks ago, I pointed out that the bracha bore mine mizonos is missing from the Mishnah, but Rav and Shmuel have it. But they say that you only make bore mine mizonos on the five grains, on the chamishas mine dagon, in which case only the chamishas mine dagon are called mine mizonos. They're called mizonos. So how is it possible that's true if, according to the Mishnah, no derman hamazon cannot consume anything except the water and salt? It means lots of other foods are considered mazon, mizonos. And again, this is all part of the elixir. V'amar Rav Huna, no, it's not when you know there. It's not when I say I abjure any hanah from mazon. It's when I abjure any hanah from kol hazon alai, anything that is zon, that sustains. And the mazon is a technical term. Mazon means the five kinds of grain. That's what people usually use. But other foods also, other than water and salt, are zon. They do sustain. So you see from that, Alma Mishcha Zion. Olive oil does the stain. So now the Gemara says, okay, now, what makes wine special is not that it's Zion, but Ella, Chamra Sa'id, U Mishcha Lo Sa'id. So wine, the word Sa'id means Su'uda, or means to support one. So, so if that's the case, so somehow Sa'id is better than Zion. The Ritva here explains that Zion means it fills your stomach, but it doesn't strengthen your heart. I'm just telling you what he says. Whereas Sa'id even strengthens the heart. V'sa'adu libchem v'achar tavori. That's the way you can remember it. So Sa'id somehow strengthens the heart or the spirit. So the Gemara says, wait, is that now? Well, that's what makes wine special. Wine gets its own bracha because it's sa'id. So the Gemara says, is that true? Umi sa'id klal? Does wine have this effect at all? V'haksiv v'yayin yisamach levav enosh v'lechem levav enosh yisad. So the psalmist talks about two different, effect of two different foods. This is from Baruch Yinashi. Wine rejoices the spirit. Okay, we get that. And then bread states, bread sustains. Okay, the lechem levav enosh yisad. So you see that wine is not so aid. So the Gemara says now, nahamahu decide, bread only is so aid. It doesn't make people happy, but it fills them. Chamra, I'm sorry, chamra is beitarte, resume one. Chamra is beitarte, the end of the first wide line. Wine has two qualities. Sa'idu misameach. It sustains and makes you happy. Nahama, but bread, misad sa'id, but samuche lo misameach. But bread only states you, it doesn't make you happy. So the Gemara says, if that's true about wine, ihachi nivarech alai shalosh brachos. So if you have wine, why don't you bench on it? So the Gemara answers, Lo kavi inish tsudasa ilave. That's very nice. In theory, you could, but people don't do that. So now, Amar Lema Nachman Bar Yitzchak L'Rava, I kava ilave tsudasa mai. Okay, let's say one person decides he wants to be kavi a tsuda. On wine, he wants to make that a tsuda. Would that person have to bench? Because he is kavi. He is koveya on it. So the Gemara says, Amar Lei, Rabba responded for Nachum Bar Yitzchak, L'chsheyavo Eliyahu v'yomar, Ihavya kibi'usa. When Eliyahu Navi comes, he can tell us whether or not this is actually called Krius. But Hashda, but right now, Miha, Batla Daito Eitzokawana. It's not normal. And therefore, you don't make, even if you are Kovea on it, even if you're Kobayan, if you do not make Berachas HaMasa. Okay. So this is a very interesting Gemara. Now, the closest echo you have to this in the Mishnah, but it's not quite the same thing, is Rabbi Akiva's position, which is found in the Mishnah on, where is it? Later in the parak, and I have not seen any of the Rishonim who talk about these two together, even though they're very relevant. And my Mishnah is escaping me, but it's here. I promise you that it's here. Rabbi Akiva Shita Achilu Afilu Achal Shelek Behu Mizono. Ah, here it is. It's not correct. Memdalad Amin Aleph, the last full daf in the parak. On Memdalad Amin Aleph in the Mishnah says, Ochal Anachem Uta'in of Yerimonim. If you eat the fruits of the Shiva Saminim, of the seven species which Eretz Yisrael is praised for, Mivorech Achareim Shalosh Brachos. You make Berachas HaMasan afterwards. Three full brachos. It's not counting Atova Meitiv, that was added later. Divrei Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel says, you bench. Bachachomim Omrim, Bracha Achas, or Bracha Achas Mein Shalosh. No, Al Aretz Ba'a parents. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Afilu Ochal Shelech Behu Mezono, Mevarech Alav Gimel Brachos. If your food is roasted vegetables, and the Gemara explains which vegetable, who can be sustained, on what vegetables would people be sustained on roasted vegetables, So if that's your food, Rabbi Akiva says that you bench on that. We don't pass like Rabbi Akiva. The question is, what is the relationship between his shita and what's being proposed here? Is that the same thing? How is that different from if this person is koveya suda on wine, you know, should they bench on that? What would Rabbi Akiva say? I didn't see anything in the Rishonim talking about any connection between the two. But what is clear from our Gemara is that we would ignore this individual because most people are not koveya suda on wine. So here's the question. Meat and potatoes. I think if you go in this country, hamburger and french fries, but you skip the bun. People are koveya suda. This is...
Many people don't eat bread.
Correct. Even without keto, without the keto diet, people don't eat bread like that. It used to be bread was the staple, and you have condiments with the bread, you have hummus with the bread, you have this with the bread. But let's say for steak and potatoes, right there, or French fries, French fries this summer. So what do you do? So I believe he's a mechadish. The translation of that in English would be a maverick. I believe Rav Yoel ben Nun is said to bench on eating steak and potatoes. Yeah. I'm also told that Rav Lichtenstein, Zichron al-Bracha, was machmir or machbid to always eat bread, because if he was concerned about this particular Gemara. It's so much, I think, Rav Lichtenstein to do it exactly that. And as the Gemara does suggest that if it's clear that people are koveya suda on a particular type of food, even though there's no bread, so you might not wash before, because that may be not clear, maybe you need your bread, but it would appear that you're supposed to bench after it. I do not think that outside of, you know, Rav Yoel ben Nun and maybe some of his followers, I don't think that's the accepted practice, but it's not clear what the reason for that is.
It does seem like a loophole.
It wasn't designed that way. It's just, it's correct. Right. And then we, you know, as I said before, the two things that from Jews like to avoid like the plague is number one, getting fleshic, and number two, having to wash and bench. So that's the joke. But the fact is that the reason why we don't eat bread in most circumstances is not because we don't. I mean, if they put bread on the table, most of us, if we didn't have to wash and bench, you know, if we didn't make breakfast, probably would eat some. But it's not sort of a main part of our meals anymore the way it once was. So the fact that we don't have bread is not because we're trying to avoid benching. It's because the food habits have shifted. Nonetheless, it raises this very interesting and tricky question. Right, right. But when you think about Middle Eastern foods, it's much more. The bread is the focus of the meal. But in American, you know, food, it has changed. It's not that way. And so it really raises it raises a tricky question. You know, what do you do about that? So anyway, I don't think that the Olam is... Machbid is careful, is concerned about this issue, but it's an interesting question. It's an interesting question. I guess we have lots and lots of chumers that we do because that's just the way it was done, even if they don't make sense contextually. So perhaps this is a kula that we also do, that even though contextually it makes no sense, but technically speaking, it falls under
the spirit of the law.
Correct. And as we adhere to the letter of the law, even though it's not clear. In other words, if there weren't this Gemara, we would just say, you know, and I mean, it goes further. You can't bet. In other words, if you're not chayav in benching, it's a bracha levatala.
Right.
So it's not like, in other words, that's part of the reason why one of the reasons people would not be machmir just to bench here is because the question of might be a bracha levatala. So in Lichtenstein's solution is not to spell if you're keto. It's certainly, well, it's certainly something you don't want to do, but it is sort of a classic response to this type of a suffix. Well, again, the question would be whether Rabbi Akiva's position appears to be that even though it's your personal preference, nobody else, you bench. If that is your standard mazon, then you bench. Whereas the Gemara here clearly, that Gemara rejects Rabbi Akiva's position. I assume this is the rejection, that the fact that you're koveya doesn't mean it's kavias for anybody else. But let's say really a society is koveya, so that's a much trickier question. All right. So anyway, so the Gemara's conclusion then is that wine has the capacity to both sate and rejoice, cause one to rejoice, whereas bread only has the capacity of bread. Well, we're not just of the bread now, but olive oil, while it sustains, it is not sta'id. It does not, the way the ritual says, strengthen the heart, neither is it misameach, and therefore olive oil does not get a special bracha, and it's just bari prihayitz. But now, here's where we run into the problem. Gufa. Now the Gemara goes back to quote a statement that was quoted incidentally in the previous sugya, and now it wants to analyze it. Gufa. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. V'chein Amar Rav Yitzchak Amar Rav Yochanan. Shemen Zayis Mevarchan Allah Vorei Pri Ha'itz. You have to make a Vorei Pri Ha'itz on olive oil. Heichi Dami. How did you consume this olive oil? If you want to say it means you just took a cup of olive oil and you drank it. The Gemara says, Ozuke Mazikle. It's terrible. I mean, it is awful. I find sometimes even if a little bit of olive oil is having with something, like went down the wrong way, got my hands, like, it is painful. So that's Mazik. And the way it's generally understood, you want to make a brach at all. Right? You have to get some hanor from the food. This is terrible. And the proof of this is Ditanya. Hashosa shemen shel truma mishalim es hakerem ve'mishalim es hachomesh. Whereas hasach shemen shel truma mishalim es hakerem u'mishalim es hachomesh. So a little bit of background and then translation. If a non-kohen eats truma de'oraisa, let's say, intentionally, so a zar, a non-kohen who eats the truma, is chayiv misa bidei shamayim. And if it was the kohen's truma, now you could theoretically, I know kohanim here right now, at least in the room, you could theoretically have truma that you own because you bought it from a kohen because your grandfather was a kohen and died and bequeathed you the truma. The truma belongs to you; you're not a kohen, but you still can't eat it. But if you eat it, yuchai misa bidei shamayim, you don't have to pay anything because it would be taking money from your right pocket, putting it into your left pocket. But supposing I eat a kohen, someone who's not me, my own truma, I eat a kohen's truma. So then, not only am I chai misa bidei shamayim, but I also have to pay the kohen for that which I stole from him. Assuming he didn't give me permission. If he gave me permission, then I'm just chayiv misa bidei shamayim. Now what happens if I, however, eat truma b'shogeg? I'm a non-kohen, I eat truma b'shogeg. So there, the halacha states the following, that you have to pay back the truma that you ate, and I'll explain more in a moment, plus a fifth, what we would call a quarter, fifth of the total. So if you ate drank $100 worth of wine, you would have to pay back $125. And you have to give the Kohen food, which is what we call chulin misukanim. It has been tithed properly. I mean, it's fit for consumption now. And when you give that food to the Kohen, that chulin, it turns into truma. Turns back into truma. You don't have to, if I drank wine, I don't have to give wine. I could give grain. But it has to be food that could be chayim and trumas and maestros of the same level. Let's say doraisa, if we're talking about wine and grain. So if I drank wine of the Kohen, the Shogay, Truma, in fact, even if it's my wine, the Chomesh may not, I don't remember the Chomesh has to be that way, but the Karen does.
You can't give him cash.
You cannot give him cash for the Karen. You have to give produce that already has had tithe separated from it, and then the produce turns into Truma. So if I had truma d'oraisa, and by the way, let's say it was my own truma. Let's say I'm an non-kohen, but I inherited this truma, or I bought this truma, and I eat it to shogeg. I'm chayiv now to take produce, which could become truma, separate it and designate it as replacement.
Or wine.
It could be wine. In this case, that's tevel midoraisa. Only three foodstuffs require truma samaisus midoraisa. Dagan tirosh v'yitzar, grain, olive oil, wine, and maybe grapes and olives also. The Rambam holds all fruits, but most Rishonim say dagan tirosh v'yitzar. So if I eat dagan tirosh v'yitzar, which is truma midoraisa, it's been designated such, even if it's my own, in order to achieve kapara, I have to designate other food in its place. If the truma I ate belonged to a kohen, I have to give the food to a kohen. If the truma I ate belonged to me, I just have to separate it now, and now it has kedushas truma. Okay, so that is only when you eat truma b'shogeg, and you have to do achila. Ve'ish ki yochal kodesh b'shkagah. That's to be achila. So the Braisa says the following: if a person drinks olive oil of truma, they simply pay back the keren to the kohen if there's a kohen involved. Why? Because it's like I ate your non-truma. If I go Josh and I eat your Isaac, I drink your coffee, I have to pay you for the coffee. It's not truma. So if I eat the Kohen's truma, I drink his olive oil, I have to pay him for the damage that I've done, but I don't eat on a chomesh because it's not considered achilas truma. It's no different than if I took his olive oil and I poured it on the ground. It's not achila. Therefore, I don't add on a chomesh. I don't go through this process. But if I anoint myself with oil of truma, and sicha is considered like shtia, like drinking, that's a normal way of using olive oil, which is total. I mean, you could put it in a salad dressing, that would be one thing. But if I anoint myself with it, that's normal. The N, even the olive oil as is, I don't have to mix it with other things to make it usable. So that's what the Braisa says. The Tanya, hashosa shemen shel truma, mishalem es hakeren, vein mishalem es hachomesh, because it's not called achila, it's just mazik. So you see from that brisa that if you drink olive oil, it's terrible. That's, if it weren't so bad, you'd be chayav to pay the kohen keren v'chomesh, and it would turn into truma. It would be achila. It wouldn't just be you will mazik the truma.
You put it in the salad.
Normal. The only question is whether there's bitzel or not. But yes, in theory, yes, if the truma wasn't betela. Let's read the continuation of the Gemara, because they're going to struggle to get to this. They want to find a case where that might be, even if you're right, that could be true in the loss of Truma. Here, it won't help us, because clearly when you have a salad, you don't make a bracha on the salad dressing. Right? In other words, it could be for Achila's Truma purposes, that's called Achila, and you're Chayiv, but you wouldn't make the Gemara's about to say, you wouldn't make a bracha on that, because it would be the tafel, not the ikar. So the Gemara says, okay, now, Ela de ka'achalai de pas. You eat the olive oil with bread, which is very standard thing, nice restaurants. They bring you a nice bread, you dip it in, they bring you nice olive oil, and you dip it as an appetizer. The only problem, so that could be the way you make eating the olive oil, and it's normal, it's not masik. But the Gemara says, Ihachi, havi le pas, ikar, v'hu tatel. It's nice, it's a normal way of eating olive oil, but the bread is the ikar, and the olive oil is the tatel. And we have a tzna, we have a mishnah later in the parak, zachal, kol shuhu ikar, v'imo tefela. Whenever you have a primary food and the other thing is secondary, you make one bracha and it exempts the other one as well. No, no, but if the olive oil were ikar with the bread, then you just make the bracha on the olive oil. You wouldn't make a bracha on bread. If the olive oil were truly ikar, it is not impossible. The Gemara, it's a question of how exclusive the Gemara is. But the Gemara later comes up with a case where pas is a tafel. The Gemara's case is a strange case. You ate these painless ginosar, these fruits of the Kinneret that were so sweet, you were oversweet, now you need to eat something super salty. You need to eat really salty herring. The only problem is, you can't handle the salty herring on its own, so to dissipate some of the saltiness, you have bread with it. So in that case, the Gemara says, the bread is a tafel. You wouldn't make hamotzi on the bread. Correct. You wouldn't make hamotzi on the bread. Yes. In fact, we had this discussion came to my shir yesterday. We were discussing all the foods that have become kosher over the last 40 years that were once, you know, echt treif. And, Wonder Bread hasn't made it yet, apparently. But Wonder Bread is a case, at least I understand the Rabbi Vitello Zichron al-Rach explained it to me, the way Wonder Bread is made, what the purpose is. It's not chametz, actually, because it doesn't have yeast in it. They blow it up with the carbon dioxide or whatever it is. It doesn't go through the process of leavening. I can't vouch for this personally. Rabbi Tendler said that the reason why they did do that is because the purpose of Wonder Bread is to provide no taste in the bread. It's so that you can enjoy just the taste of the thing that's in the sandwich. And therefore, regular bread has a flavor, the chametz matzli, the sour taste of the leavening. And therefore, that interferes with the flavor. So Wonder Bread basically is the quintessential American food. It's garbage, right? It's really this food that has no taste. Its purpose is really a holder. And therefore, I believe that if you have a Wonder Bread sandwich, and we don't have to worry about Pesach Halacha L'maisa, since I think Wonder Bread is not, at least not accepted as kosher, I would say when you have a Wonder Bread sandwich, you make a bracha on what's inside the sandwich. Because the whole purpose of that bread is to not be bread. It's just a holder for it. But it is bread, because it's flour and water. So theoretically, it should be good for, I'm joking, matzah on Pesach. If it's not leavened, then it's water and flour together. So, you know.
Well, that's what I said. If you're eating something now, the bread is only a couple.
So let's wait till we get to later in the parak. I'll keep you in suspense for a while. In theory, if the bread is a tafel, not easy to get there, but then maybe. I think I have an opinion about certain circumstances, wraps. But
herring on a cracker.
Well, mezonos is easier to make into a tafel than bread, I think. But anyway, so we'll talk about it when you get to it later in the parak. But in the meanwhile, the Gemara says that the bottom line is if you eat the olive oil by the bread is the ikar and the olive oil is the tafel. So the Gemara says, okay, now, Ela de kashasi le al yedei anigron. So anigron is some type of a concoction which has shemen in it. Rashi says it's mentioned in the Mishnah. It's not the Mishnah, it's mentioned in several brises. The Gemara will explain what anigron is in a moment. Literally in a moment. The Amar Rabba Bar Shmuel, anigron maya de silka, achsidron maya de chule shalke. So the anigron and the achsidron both have oil, lot oil mixed into it. But they are basically, like vegetable broth. One of them, the first one, anigron is maya de silka, beet water. I don't know if that's borscht without the beets. And then the other one is just the general vegetable broth, the kule shalki. So the Gemara says if that, and there's olive oil is one of the ingredients. So the Gemara says, in kain, havalei anigron ikar, b'shemen tafel. Still, in that case, the shemen is a tafel, and the anigron, the rest of it is the ikar. Utan, ze'akal, koshu ikar, v'imot tela, mavarach ala ikar, potos atela. You make the bracha on the ikar, and you exempt the tela. In that case, the bracha you would make on it would be bari pri ha'adama. Because a vegetable broth, even a clear vegetable broth is meishlakos, you make ha'adama on. So finally the Gemara says now, hacham amaya skinan, bechoshesh begrono. A person has got a sore throat or some problem in his throat, and apparently olive oil was good for it, but you couldn't drink it straight, so you'd put a lot of olive oil into the anigron, and you would drink it that way, maybe even gargle it that way, and in this case the person might drink it. And that, in that case, the shemen is actually the ikar, and the bracha you would make on the zibori pri ha'itz. And now, just to explain that choshesh begrono, why, b'tanya, choshesh begrono, on Shabbos, you're not allowed to swallow pure medicine. Right? In general, on Shabbos, when a person is not sick enough to have to not function anymore, if they go down and lie in bed, if they're not known from the mishkav, so you're not allowed to take medicine on Shabbos. So it doesn't mean if you have a course, if you're on a course of antibiotics, of course you continue taking that on Shabbos. That's a much more serious issue. But when we talk about what's called a mechush ba'oma, yeah, what's that? Chronic medication. When you have a mild headache, yeah, your function might be a little off. So that's when you're not supposed to take medicine on Shabbos. The gzera of refuah, we're afraid that they used to grind up their own medicines, they're afraid you'll grind up spices, and gzera shema, and therefore they made a gzera not to take medicine on Shabbos unless you were already the stage of no fel b'nishkav. If you already had to lie down because you couldn't function, and certainly things that are worse than that, things that move towards either sakanas eber, danger to limb, or sakanas nefeshos, danger to life, so then certainly those things you continue taking, those things you can do on Shabbos. But a mechush ba'oma, that they did not, they prohibited engaging in refuah. Most poskim assume that to be the case. There was one major poskim, I think it was Rav Chaim Na'eh, who argued that the gzera doesn't apply to it anymore because we don't make our medicines that way. And I believe they say that the Rav held that aspirin, I mean, I'm not sure, it's considered machal briyim. Now, one day it should be said, a person who is healthy, but just takes something as a preventative, there's no gzera before. You have to be a chola. You have to be a chola, you have to be a little sick, but only a mechush ba'oma. What's that? Right. So that's what I heard said in the interrupt. I don't know if that's true or not.
That would be a chronic medication.
Yes, but for someone who's not sick. This doesn't have symptoms now. It's preventative.
Yes.
So a bari can eat, if the gzera is only on a chola, but a chola who's only a mechush ba'oma, who's only a little bit off. There's no issur on a bari, and there's no issur on a chola who's real chola. So anyway, the Mishnah says on Shabbos, hachoshesh, but the Brisa says, and with respect to Shabbos, Hachoshesh begrono lo ya'arenu b'shemen tchila b'shabbos avonosein shemen harbe l'socha nigron uboleya. So on Shabbos, and I don't want to really explore the details here, but the way Rashi probably understands, you're not allowed to drink olive oil straight, gargle it in your throat, and first gargle it in your throat and then swallow it. You're allowed to just swallow it straight, but you can't gargle it because it's clear it's l'shem refuah. But that's also very hard to do. Nobody wants to do that. So what you can do is you can put a lot of olive oil into anigron, which is considered a machal briyim. It's food that people eat. And therefore, you could just swallow that straight up. You can't gargle it. And that will maybe help you throw it a little bit on Shabbos. In other words, And now you have to make a bracha on the olive oil. And we generally assume there's a very funny position the Rashba quotes, distinguishing between this during the week versus on Shabbos. But the Rishonim assume that there's no difference between the weekday and Shabbos. It all depends upon why you are putting, what is the purpose of drinking the anigron. If the purpose is for refuah, then you have to make a bracha on the olive oil. If the purpose is because you enjoy drinking this anigron, then the ikar of the anigron is the bari pri adama, is the vegetables that have been cooked. So now the Gemara says, if that's the case, pshita, well, of course, if Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan say that a person who drinks olive oil has to make a bracha, makes a bracha bari pri eitz, well, and if you come up with a case where it's actually normal drinking, so of course, why would you think otherwise? So the Gemara says, no, mahu detema kevan de l'refua kamachave lo libra chalapa. You might have thought that since the primary purpose of eating is only for refua, therefore you don't make a bracha at all. Kamash malon kevan de isle hana mine voy beruche. Since you have a hana, you have to make a bracha. There is one area this comes up, halach lemaisa. It's not this case, but in drinking of water, we say that if you have to swallow a pill, and all you do, if you drink soda to draw, you know, chas v'shalom, to swallow the pill, then you have to make a bracha shaka no matter what. But if you're just drinking water, just to swallow the pill, enough to do that, you don't make a bracha on the water. Whereas if you're drinking also because you're thirsty, so then you would make a bracha on the water. So that's really a question of whether you're getting hanas achila, the enjoyment of, you know, of the food. So again, most foods have flavor and you enjoy it. Water doesn't, but if you're thirsty, you show some mind with sma'o, if you're drinking water to do away with your thirst, so then you make the shackle. But if you're doing it just so you can swallow the medicine, that's the refuah. Since there's no hana from it, you would not make a bracha.